I believe it is just the top of the hour, 6 p.m. here on WEFT 90.1 FM radio. I just want to give a shout out to, well, the person that I, my guest that I interviewed. Well, we pre-recorded the interview, but I was hoping to play The Breeders, who, funny enough, do have the same bassist. I believe it's Kelly Deal. I was also trying to find, hopefully, and maybe if I can find it, Screaming Females, I'll explain later. But just a reminder that you are listening to WEFT Champagne 90.1 FM, streaming us online at, you can stream us online at weft.org. You can also find my show, publicly archived shows of where we're at, and all the other programs that we do, like radio theater, radio program, or other radio programming. And just a reminder, since this program does get, of where we're at, does get quite political, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. It is Monday, March 29th, and I say that because, well, one, to kind of date this, so when people listen to it, they know when this aired. But next, a week from this Tuesday, April 6th, is, here in Champaign County, we have a general election for municipal election, city council. So things like, obviously, what I just said, city councils, I believe school boards, mayors, those types of elections, which are very important. I'm speaking a little bit too close to this mic. But yes, that's Tuesday, April 6th, if you would like. There's a couple of places where you can look up about candidate information and about your registering your voter information. You can go to the Champaign County Clerk website. That's Champaign. I'll do it right now. Champaign County Clerk. No, that's County Circuit. You don't want that. County Clerk. So Champaign County Clerk. CHAMPAG. N County CONTY CLERK .com. It's all one word. You can also just Google it. And that will take you to their website. And you can click on voter information to request your mail ballot. You can also go to elections and also select vote by mail ballot request. And another one is the League of Women's Voters. I believe it's LWVC. I'll just do that really quick because I do have a interview I believe it's LWVC. LWVChampaignCounty.org. That's the website, but if you want to look for more about voter information, where to vote for. But just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. So I did a few weeks ago, I interviewed Urbana City Council candidate Jaya Colasetti. She is running in Urbana City Council, Ward 4. Unfortunately, we had to cut that interview off short because of the circumstances. It happens. But we did a follow-up interview, and we talked about things such as infrastructure, COVID, transparency on COVID vaccination information, and how the City Council plays a part in that. We also talked about some current events and about diversity in the City Council and why it matters. So yes, this is my interview with Jaya Colasetti. I believe it should be queued up. Let me just make sure I got it. Yep, levels are good, should be pretty good. So this is my interview with Jaya Colasetti. It will be most of this hour's about, so you'll hear back from me in about 42 minutes or so.
I am speaking with Jaya Colasetti. She was generous and nice enough to do a follow-up interview with me. And she is running as a Urbana City Council candidate in, is it Ward 4? Mm-hmm. Jaya, a couple of things have happened since our last, since our first interview, and I kind of want to get your perspective and take on, opinion on it. Last week, the Illinois Commerce Commission decided not to extend moratorium on utility shutoffs, which means they will most likely, as of now, be ending on April 1st, which means people who are perhaps behind on bills, on utility bills, so things such as water, electricity, and if they're not able to pay up or if they're behind on bills, essentially their utilities will be shutting off. So what's your response to how the Illinois Commerce Commission decided to go ahead and not extend the moratorium?
Yeah, I think it's really sad to see that they're not putting people at the center of these conversations, right? That moratorium is a lifeline for a lot of people who are really struggling right now. You know, it was put into place because there's a pandemic happening. The pandemic has not ended. So the fact that that protection is being removed while we're still in the middle of this, yes, there's hope with the vaccine. Yes, there are some other systems of support, but we are still in a pandemic. We are still seeing a lot of folks who have not seen their jobs come back, who may be struggling, who may be balancing childcare, child education, with also trying to figure out how to work, right? There's so many mothers and fathers, parents in general, who haven't been able to work to the same degree or in the same ways that they were previously because they have those additional aspects of taking care of their children. You know, there's so many different ways that people are still being impacted by this pandemic. It's odd to me. I think it's unfortunate and something for the city of Urbana to think about how do we address it at the local level? Because again, the reality hasn't changed, right? We're not through this crisis. And so to remove those protections when we haven't even made it through the situation that made it necessary in the first place seems irresponsible and certainly doesn't seem like it's prioritizing the well-being of individuals.
And one of your main platforms I know is repairing infrastructure in terms of, and there is a phone number that people can call the Illinois Commerce Commission. What would you hope that the Illinois Commerce Commission do? I think right now it's currently still up to them. It can, in some cases, it can be up to the governor, Illinois Governor Pritzker, but what would be your hope that they do between now and, well, the end of the month, at less than a week now? What would you hope that they do in the next coming week?
I would hope that they would recognize these are real people's lives that they are impacting, right? So actually, and I love that, you know, idea of providing that phone number so that folks can call, people can contact the governor's office, making sure that we are saying that we care, right? We want to see that protection stay in place. There are still people who need that support. Even with the moratorium in place, there have been concerns about utility shutoffs, so removing that protection is very concerning to me. Like I said, at the local level, we have some ways of providing support. I know that, you know, the Regional Planning Commission and the Cunningham Township Supervisor's Office have been, you know, working hard to try to make sure that if there are concerns about shutoffs, that they're being addressed quickly, but there should be a more, I think that larger level of protection, that larger level of saying, we're not going to add one more thing for people to worry about during a pandemic, that's really important. So I would definitely like to see the commission understand that, right? Like, again, we're not through this. And the same thing for the governor, right? If that's the way that things are leaning, to say, no, we need to keep this in place.
Imagine, I think a lot of, you know, I talked to a young woman a few months ago. This was January. She was a young mother, single mother, had two kids. And essentially what happened was, because of the pandemic, she lost a lot of her work and she fell behind on bills. Now she does, I believe she did try to use LIHEAP, which is for people earning low income. Now, from what I understand, LIHEAP, they do help with utilities such as electricity, but not water. And this was unfortunately still a problem because, unfortunately, she got a pink slip in the mail and a few days later, her water got shut off, and she eventually had to move out of her home. So, but what I found, I think, a lot of frustrating, I think what a lot of people that asked questions, frustrating was that, yes, there are these assistance programs, but they're either not a lot of people know about them.
Right.
And so there's lack of information for people. And when you're, you know, in her case, when you're a single mother and you're already, you know, you're already working, yeah, and you're just essentially trying to take care of your family, the assistance, you may not be able to find out in time about the assistance, right, or the assistance might not be enough.
Right.
And I think that was what was there was still a lack of understanding from the ICC, the Illinois Commerce Commission, and also they didn't really take, another thing that I think that was a little frustrating was that they didn't even talk about, they didn't even have a discussion about it. There was, it was just, this is next agenda item, are there any objections or discussions, and there was none, and they just voted, and they just decided to not extend the moratorium. So as a city council, how would you make sure that your constituents' concerns are heard as a city council ward four?
Well, I think that example that you're bringing up is so important to, you know, thinking about the resources that we do have. I mentioned the Cunningham Township Supervisor's Office. Cunningham Township is coterminous, right? Has the same geographic area as Urbana. You know, for Champaign, there's the Champaign Township as well, which is also coterminous. And those offices are designed to provide support for folks in crisis like that, right? But I think that that's a service that isn't talked about enough. That's, they're doing important work. They're providing important resources, including paying for utilities. I know especially water, that's a high priority, but I think that not enough people know about it. Making sure that information is out there, that other social service providers know that too, because sometimes people will reach out and they'll be in crisis and they'll reach out to whoever will answer the phone, right? So making sure that other service providers know about that, I think, is really important. And also recognizing that the Urbana City Council serves as the ex officio board, right? Like they provide guidance for Cunningham Township, right? So whatever the supervisor wants to do, the council also needs to be on board. So in terms of thinking about how to make sure that perspective of community members is being heard, as it relates to those support services, I think it is important to recognize that there is basically a social service branch of our local government that the Urbana City Council has a major role in contributing to. And so as that feedback, as that information from residents is coming in, that's one natural area. But then there's also that opportunity to have those conversations with the township supervisor's office to hear what are the concerns that are being brought to them. Where are those gaps? Where are the areas that we need to be bolstering and providing more funding for? Because that is something that we have to recognize, that in this pandemic, there are going to be additional financial needs to support our community members. What I would, you know, in terms of, again, going back to the statewide level, you know, what we're doing here at the local level, a lot of it is responsive, right? How do we help someone who's already in that crisis? Those moratoriums help us be more proactive, right? Like, how do we keep people from being in that desperate situation where they're deciding between water and food, right? So I think it needs to be a multi-prong approach, right? Where we're thinking about ensuring those services are available locally, but that continuing to advocate on the state level as well.
You talk about one of your running on repairing our infrastructure and things such as our roads and sidewalks. Is there anything that you've noticed or in your district for either all around Urbana that in terms of infrastructure that you want to make, that you're prioritizing in your campaign, that you would at least address or hope to change specifically when it comes to infrastructure?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the infrastructure problem is a huge one, right? Like, this is not something that we're going to be like, oh, here's the solution and it's all done. It was really interesting. I was reading over the budget for our current fiscal year, right? The budget that applies right now, and it's right there in the budget. Like, we have massive infrastructure needs, but we need outside funding. So there's a recognition within Urbana that those problems are there. And what I want to see is that we have a plan, because we are in the place of working on our comprehensive plan of how do we start addressing those issues. And in some ways, it's difficult to say, like, which is the biggest. I know talking to members in my ward, the lack of lighting is something that's making a lot of people feel really unsafe. I know I was walking just from a friend's place who lives a couple blocks away just recently, and you know, it wasn't late, but it was pitch dark, right? There was no street lights, very few porch lights, and that's concerning for folks, especially when that's combined with the fact that some of these areas do not have sidewalks and our roads are really rough. I know that a lot of times, at least in the part of Urbana that I live in, when it comes to road repair, they put down that kind of loose gravel and they, you know, that covers over the holes, but it very easily comes back up again. I'm a cyclist, like my main form of transportation is my bike. And so those bumps are pretty impactful. But what worries me even more so is accessibility for folks who may have mobility concerns, right? Of like, how are we making sure that people can actually get to wherever they need to get to, regardless of their mode of mobility or transportation? So like I said, it's hard for me to say like, here is the thing, because I think they're all important, right? The lighting, the fact that there are so many potholes, the fact that we don't have sidewalks. And like I said, I know that some of those are much bigger projects that aren't going to be like a, you know, snap our fingers and we're done, we've got this taken care of. But I want to see us move from beyond saying like, hey, we know this is a problem, to, okay, we know this is a problem and we're going to start chipping away at it. We're going to start laying the foundation to make those changes so that people feel more comfortable taking a walk in the evening or aren't worried about like falling, right? Or hitting a pothole and flying off their bike or what have you. And I think that's especially important too, because Urbana has passed Vision Zero, right? So the goal of zero serious injuries or traffic fatalities for cyclists and pedestrians, that needs to be part of it, right? We need to make sure that our streets are safe for folks who are walking or cycling, what have you. But again, you know, if we're going to pass resolutions and not make any plan for how we're going to work towards it, then it's just words.
Yeah, I think there is kind of, and I talked with this with another candidate about, I guess, make sure that, you know, people who ride bikes are safe, and that the, you know, in terms of bike routes, because I can't exactly remember, but there might have been an unfortunate accident here somewhere in Urbana where a person was struck. But that is an issue. I mean, certainly it is in cities, but I know in terms of that's certainly an issue. As now, I think you are starting to see people, instead of use cars, use bikes to get around. And Urbana's not a city, don't get me wrong, but it's not necessarily need a car to get around. And I think, you know, younger generations, my generation, Gen Z or whatever have you, are being more, instead of using cars, they're, yeah, using bikes. And that's something in terms of infrastructure, in terms of transportation, that's something you need to keep in mind.
Well, and I think it leads to the fact that there's a lot of interest in Urbana about, you know, greener initiatives, right? Mm-hmm. So thinking about, too, how do we get more cars off the road, right? Mm-hmm. And that's like a small piece, right? Like there are construction pieces to that and all of that, but also thinking about how do we make it safer for folks who are riding. Yes, Urbana is a smaller city, right? It's not a Chicago-sized city, but the number of fatalities that we have of pedestrians and cyclists are very high for a city of our size. And that doesn't mean that it's happening all the time, but I think it's enough that many people do know people who have been seriously injured or killed by cars, you know, when they were either walking or cycling. And there have been some, not only in Urbana, but also in our surrounding areas, right on some of those rural roads that don't have adequate shoulders. And that's a project like that needs to be worked on with the state as well. But yeah, just making sure that people are, you know, provided the basic infrastructure to be safe, regardless of form of transportation.
You talked about addressing homelessness and, you know, affordable housing. How would you go? How would you go about doing it as a city council? Because I know obviously it's not just, you know, you have to work with your fellow city council members, but how would you go about addressing those issues?
Well, for one thing, and part of this is for me, like coming from working at a local nonprofit, I'm always really mindful of the hard work that our nonprofits already are doing. And there's actually a consortium of local organizations that are working to address homelessness. So I think it's really important to have those folks at the table. I think it's also important, again, the townships I know have been doing some work around addressing some of the gaps that we had. We didn't previously have an option for homeless families with children. And Cunningham Township has been able to you know, provide some options for folks who are in that situation, who are experiencing homelessness. So I think some of it is looking at, you know, who's already doing that work, where are those gaps. I know that there are also concerns about violations of our non-discrimination policies, right? So landlords who are refusing to rent based on criminal conviction, that's illegal in Urbana, right? That's against our stated policies, our laws. And so making sure that if that's happening, that they're held to account, right? So some of it is low-hanging fruit of like, let's look at our folks in compliance with the expectations that have been set. The other thing related to that discrimination piece is also people are not supposed to be discriminating based on payment type, right? So folks who qualify for, you know, assisted housing, landlords need to be taking that, right? So I think some of it is thinking about looking at that compliance piece to make sure that we can get more folks housed. And then also thinking about, okay, for people who maybe that's not the right resource for them, what work has already been done in our community? Where are those gaps? I know there's been some really incredible conversations, especially around trying to address LGBTQ homelessness, especially LGBTQ youth homelessness. And so really making sure that the folks who are already doing that work, you know, at the UP Center, at the LGBT Resource Center, are part of those conversations so that the solutions we're coming up with are specific to our community and are filling the gaps where they're really needed.
And you also, in your campaign, talked about racial justice. We did kind of talk about policing in our last interview. And I did read, I think, a bit about, I don't know if it was News Gazette or Smile Politely, about how you saw the last year marches for justice. I don't know if you want to call them the Black Lives Matter marches that quite happened here in both Champaign and Urbana. Did that have an effect on you to run for city council?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I appreciate you're bringing up. So yes, addressing racial bias in policing needs to be part of thinking about racial justice, but I also think it's important that that's not where we stop. In terms of the impact of, you know, the protests over the summer, working towards racial justice, working to address racism, structural inequality is something that's always been important to me. I think, you know, seeing what the community was asking for at that point, and then also the fact that a lot of that hasn't been realized is something that's been really motivating to me in terms of feeling like this is an area I might be able to kind of push for more change. The other piece of that too is, you know, I work at the University of Illinois. I work with a lot of students of color, and to hear students saying like, okay, everyone came out and protested this summer, but now they've moved on, right? Like that's not the trendy thing. People don't care. People aren't talking about it anymore. And that's heartbreaking to me, right? Like it can't just be when it's convenient or when people, and I'm not saying had it ill intent or anything like that. I think there were a lot of people who were really galvanized into action. But I think that as time goes on, as we don't have that horrifying image of the murder of George Floyd visually in front of us, it's easy for people in privileged positions to take a step back and kind of not think about it so much. And that's having a real impact on folks of color, right? That's having a real impact on people who are saying like, wait, you said you cared, but now you're not even talking about this anymore, right? You're ready to move on. And that's a luxury, right? There are a lot of people who can't just move on because it's real. This is part of their daily life. That fear, that concern for safety doesn't just go away when we're not hearing about something on a national level, right? This is happening here locally. This is something that is not unique to Urbana, but it exists in Urbana as well. We've seen messages left in some of our historically Black neighborhoods that had language that is harmful, it's hate speech, right? That, you know, is meant to cause fear within our communities of color, right here in Urbana-Champaign, right? So I think it is really concerning to me, not only that, you know, people just aren't talking about it so much, but also some of that energy of like, we're going to change things, we're going to create new policies, we're going to create new ideas. I'm just not seeing that being actualized. And like I said, it's one thing if you say you're going to do something, but it's a very different thing to actually do it. And I know that can take time. I know that can be frustrating. I know it can be scary. But you have to keep doing that work if we actually want to create a better Urbana that feels safe for all of our residents.
Tomorrow, there's going to March 27th today, there's going to be an event about stopping anti-Asian violence tomorrow at 2 p.m. at the alma mater statue in Urbana, I imagine you've been paying attention to and seeing the news of what's been happening with this anti-Asian violence that's been happening really for a while now, really, especially, you know, as it pertains to the COVID-19 pandemic. And this was brought up even at the last city council meeting this week. I'll just ask you what your perspective is and what you have to, if you have any, you know, anything you would like to say about that, because obviously we have a quite a big Asian American population here in Urbana, and you know, as especially, you know, with the university, there's a lot of Asian American students, whether they're foreign, studying from, you know, coming over here to America, studying abroad, and you know, obviously now there's this, you know, kind of rhetoric, you know, this racism rhetoric feeling. And so how would you let people know that, if you just kind of want to comment on that?
Yes. You know, there's this, like, almost hard to know where to start, right? Because this I can say for me, even though South Asians are not the folks who are currently being targeted, this hits close to home for me. I do identify as an Asian American woman. My father was from India, lived the last part of his life in India. All of my family on his side of the family is still in India, and I go back whenever I can. And so, like I said, this is not new, and I do recognize that South Asians are not the folks who are being targeted right now. But I remember times growing up where it didn't feel safe to be brown. And that's not, like, that's gone away, but there have been times where it was worse. Like, I can say one concrete example of how that felt. My father lived most of his life as a resident alien, right, is the term, right? He wasn't a citizen. He was married to an American, so he, you know, was legally allowed to stay without visa questions and stuff like that. But after 9/11, the level of violence and hate and concerns about discrimination were so intense that that's when he became a citizen. So, you know, I can think of many examples growing up where I've seen family members targeted. You know, my father was a professor. He had the police called on him while he was standing and waiting for a train in the north suburbs of Chicago, right? Like, I've seen this. And so, of course, my heart goes out to folks who are being targeted even more so now. And I'm worried, right? Like, I want to make sure that we are taking those steps as a community to keep our Asian American and Pacific Islander members of our communities safe, right? Pretend that this, again, doesn't impact our community, because there are those real concerns. I want to give a shout out to Smile Politely. They did an incredible article documenting some of the more recent examples of discrimination and hate towards Asian folks here in Urbana-Champaign. And so I do think it's important that we're having these conversations, that we're thinking about how do we create a community of care where we're all committing to keep folks who are being targeted safe in our community, whether it's Asian folks, whether it's Black folks, whether it's LGBTQ folks, making sure that we're providing the education that we need, and that commitment is real, right? It's actionable. I know the Asian American Cultural Center on campus has organized a bystander intervention training for folks to get more informed, to get more involved. And then that's coming up in April. I'm forgetting the date off of the top of my head. But I think it's also important to continue to pay attention to how our elected officials are talking about this. You know, Rodney Davis said that he didn't see anything wrong with some of the language that has been used related to Asian and Pacific Islander folks, terms used by the former president that clearly have provoked this violence, right? And I think that that's something that people need to be paying attention to. Like you said, there is a very large Asian American, Pacific Islander community here in Urbana-Champaign. And he's supposed to be representing us. So actions matter at every single level. Making sure we're providing that commitment to our community is really important.
I guess we'll kind of, since you did bring up a bit about your background, can you kind of talk a little bit more about professional background? And if you did bring up your personal background, because I think, you know, as I've talked about this with other candidates, you know, with diversity, yes, it does a few things. It kind of it's important to bring that perspective, and that, how can I say this, you know, everyone, you know, no matter, goes through different experiences, and you bring that to, in your case, you're bringing that to this city council. That if you kind of you have a master's, or
yeah,
you're an MBA, sorry, that's, yeah. Yeah.
Kind of a funny combination of things. So I guess I can start with some of the, like, me as a person background, and I can talk about my educational background as well. Like I said, my father is from India. I grew up in and around the Chicago, and came down here for my undergraduate program at the university. And I majored in gender and women's studies with a history minor. So, like, that framework of thinking about social justice has always been a part of my education. Both of my parents were social workers when I was in undergrad. My mom moved down here to do hospice and home care work with Carl, and then actually was an oncology social worker after that. And my sister also moved down here. So this has become our home, right? Like, this, I moved down here as an undergraduate, and then my family kind of followed me, which was really, really nice. I worked at a local organization for a year after undergrad, and then I went to Washington, D.C., to get a master's in public policy with a concentration in women's studies at the George Washington University. So that was my 2 years away, except for coming back and staying with family during the breaks. And that was really informative, really important to me too, like getting to learn skills around policy analysis, learning more about kind of the federal government as well. After getting my first master's, I came back to see you and worked a number of places, started volunteering at Rape Advocacy Counseling and Education Services and RACES. I then started a position there as a prevention educator. So I was doing age-appropriate programming for students of varying ages, ranging, you know, topics ranging from, you know, healthy boundaries and who's your trusted adult with the really little kids, to having more serious conversations with middle schoolers and high schoolers about healthy relationships and identifying red flags in abusive relationships and supporting survivors, right? Because there are high schoolers who definitely know people who are survivors. There are survivors of all ages. So I did that. That was my first role at RACES. But I was also there during the state budget impasse. So I know, like, now my students aren't even familiar with the fact that that happened. But we went 2 years in this state without a budget. And many social service agencies were hit really hard by that, including RACES. So for 6 months, I was actually the only employee at our local Rape Crisis Center. So, you know, I held a lot of different roles during that time, was active making sure that we had enough volunteers to keep the hotline running 24/7, and that there was medical advocacy services, right? So people who could meet survivors at the emergency department 24/7. And then I got to be part of the rebuilding process. So like I said, I was there for 6 years. My last role was as the associate director. And during that time, I was fortunate to receive a scholarship that covered much of the cost of an MBA. And I decided to take that opportunity. Having been there and seen the impact of, you know, not having maybe as diversified a funding plan or not having that expertise, I wanted to think about what can I do to make sure that something like that doesn't happen to an organization that I care about again, right? How do I make sure that they have the structure in place? How do I help make sure they have the funding in place so that if things get messed up, like this is Illinois, we have some interesting politics, that they're better able to weather that storm. So that was my motivation with doing the MBA. Like I said, I know it's a little bit of a jump for some folks of like, you went from gender and women's studies to an MBA, and they are very different worlds. But I love being able to draw on both of those skill sets and the policy analysis piece, right? They all apply to what I'm hoping to do on the council. And then I use that in terms of the work that I do now at the Women's Resources Center, where I'm overseeing sexual misconduct, which is the university's term for sexual violence, domestic violence, stalking, range of different forms of harm. So I oversee the prevention programming from the Women's Resources Center, and I do still provide confidential advising services to survivors. So I'm still directly working with folks who've experienced those forms of harm.
And so how long have you lived in Urbana?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I've lived in Urbana pretty much all of that time, except for when I was in D.C. My mom was living in Champaign for part of that time. So I'm thinking about exactly we've been in this house probably like 7 years most recently that I've been in Urbana, the little time, like I said, in Champaign and D.C. But I've been in the community since 2005.
So as of now, I believe out of the 7 city council people, I believe only 2 are women out of the city council. Now the mayor, Diane Wolf, obviously she's a woman. So how important is have diversity, and especially to have more women? As I said before, you bring that perspective, well, I guess again from your background, because you have a very diverse, very different than what's the usual background, especially when it pertains to city council, because it's usually men. But how important is that to bring that diversity and that perspective?
I do think diversity is important. I am hoping that our city council will be more diverse in terms of gender, broadly speaking, right? Not only thinking about the binary, but also making sure that folks who don't identify as male or female, man or woman, right? Rather, that there's an understanding that that's a space that should be seeing more gender diversity writ large, right? So I do think that that's important. One of the things that's really interesting to me right now with Chandra Bishop joining the council, and if I'm elected, there actually would be 4 women of color on the city council, which I think is really interesting. And I think would be, when we're thinking about representation and reflecting our community, I think that that's quite something. So I think having that different background, having those different experiences, thinking about how people have experienced the world and different forms of privilege and different forms where maybe someone has been targeted, having more diverse experiences in general is important. And I think also advocating for people to educate themselves, right? Of like, maybe there are areas that, you know, I have privilege and I need to think about what do I need to do to be a better aspiring ally, right? So I think that there's both the importance of having that representation and being a model for other folks of like, yes, this is not just for cis white men, but also thinking about like, where are those areas that we need to be providing education for ourselves? I know that there was a very long conversation just about the use of pronouns in some recent city council meetings. And so thinking about, you know, maybe that's something that city council can lead the way on. They can provide some sessions about why asking people's pronouns, respecting people's pronouns are important. And then that shouldn't land on LGBTQ folks. So I think that there are kind of multiple pieces there. One is like, yes, I do believe that diversity is important, but then also thinking about for folks with privilege that it's important to be doing that work to think about how do I become a better aspiring ally as well.
What made you want to run for a city council? I can't remember if I did, but you know, if you want to, I can ask it again. Okay, sure. If there was anything more that you wanted to add on or answer it differently.
Yeah, so I mean, for me, it's always felt important to feel like I'm connected and giving back to the community. And so politics are something I've thought about getting more involved with our local government, just being more of an active presence instead of, you know, behind the screen right now, listening to Zoom meetings. Mm-hmm. And then some of it was timing, right, of like really being impacted by not only the protests of this summer, but that lack of focus, right? The fact that I do see people kind of drifting away from those ideals that we said were important to us and wanting to bring that focus back, especially as we are developing a new comprehensive plan. That's a really big motivating factor for me of I feel like this is an area that I could make a difference.
I know the city council has been trying to, with the News Gazette, they're always updating about COVID vaccines. How would you make, in terms of being transparent with, because, you know, I know there's a lot of information about, you know, COVID vaccinations, COVID testing, and I think people are still trying to deal, you know, catching up with, you know, am I qualified? You know, what are the qualifications to getting a COVID vaccine? So how would that, I'm guessing that would be something probably on one of many things, you know, when you get to, if, you know, get to the city council on your list of things to do as a city council to kind of be informative and transparent on, you know, to your constituents, to your citizens on information about getting COVID vaccination and, you know, what's going on in the community with as it pertains to COVID.
Yeah, I think that's such an important question. Someone who has been through that process of getting signed up as well as helping other people sign up. It's really stressful and confusing, especially if someone is not tech savvy. You know, those emails go out, like at least for the university, here's an update. But if you don't work at the university, then, you know, how are you getting that information? And by the time you get that information, probably all of the slots are already full. And I know that's not, again, it's not unique to Urbana. It's not unique to Champaign County. This has been a problem like across the board because there isn't a centralized way of providing that information and making sure that folks who want the vaccines can get them. I think what's particularly concerning to me, and I do think in a lot of ways are, you know, the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District have done an incredible job in terms of, you know, safely vaccinating as many people as they possibly can. I think that that's so incredibly important. But what about the folks who don't have access to technology, right? Or again, aren't tech savvy. I was able to help my mom get signed up for her first dose, but you know, this came up in a recent city council meeting as well. What about folks who are homebound, right? Like, how are we making sure, who may be particularly vulnerable, how are we making sure that we're getting injections, getting those doses to folks who are homebound as well? And it has been interesting to see. I know that there are conversations that are starting about piloting ways to make sure that people can get the shots at home. But I think that we're going to need to think about, if we're going to try to actually reach everyone, we need to start thinking about messaging and ways that are actually going to be accessible to people who are not online, who are not getting those emails, who may not have like a phone to be able to quickly pick up and call and get a spot. So I'm really open to ideas. I mean, things that come to mind for me is, you know, like, let's go old school. Like, let's send something to people's houses of like, hey, this is where you get your vaccination. Here are the times. Here are the expectations. But I do think it's really important to recognize that not everyone is going to be, who wants the vaccine, is going to be able to find out about it or find out about it in a timely manner with the methods that we're using. And I do know that those appointments fill up so fast that I'm sure, you know, trying to send something out and then scheduling appointments and all of that kind of stuff has to be incredibly difficult. But I also think that we have to be able to do that difficult work to make sure that we can move towards people being able to, you know, get out of this isolation.
Also, another kind of issue that all I was going to think of was, and just the Champaign County Clerk brought up, he was a little concerned with how the vote turnout in the primary, and that. So, I am trying to get the word out. Like April 6th, if you live in Champaign County, and that's, you know, kind of one thing. When, you know, I've been talking with some local people here. It's just like, it just seems like people just aren't. You know, I know municipal elections aren't very.
Yeah.
I guess you know, people, they're not as exciting maybe as compared to, you know, president. You know, we just got done with one election, you know, midterms, you know, governor, president, Congress, whatever have you. So how have you been, I guess that'll be my question, how have you been trying to at least deal with, you know, getting the word out, informing people that, hey, there's another election coming up on April 6th, Tuesday. Yeah. Please register.
Yeah. For government. Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, when you said, is there anything else, that was going to be the thing. Because I think so often people don't know when the election is, right? Like, you know, when it's a federal election and even statewide offices, there's a lot more attention. There's a lot more of an understanding of, like, people have a sense of it's in November, right? You can expect that to come up. What is this thing in April, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, just really encouraging folks to get out and vote. I started primarily messaging through social media and then trying to, like, you know, figure out who would feel comfortable with me dropping off signs to try to increase awareness. I have been going door to door more, partially just because I recognize that those forms of technology are not available to everyone. For me, it's super important to be really careful about it. So obviously masked, I'm fully vaccinated. Like I said, I was very fortunate to be able to do that. But I also recognize that that doesn't protect the people I might be talking to. So I'm very mindful about distancing, about wearing a mask. I also try to think about, like, the impact on the environment. I know this might sound kind of goofy, but I do mine by bike. I'm not driving around from houses to houses. But so if anybody sees a couple of bikes going by with yard signs on the back, that's probably me and my husband. Just because we do want to think about, like, our impact on our community as well. But yeah, I have been, you know, as I'm able to, I've just recently had some folks volunteer to help pass out some literature just to, again, encourage folks to vote. I want people to vote for who they think is going to be a good leader. You know, I'm running against a Republican. I want people to learn about both candidates. I want people to learn about the other issues that are coming up. We have school board elections that are happening, right? People need to be paying attention to what's happening in our schools. We have ballot initiatives. We have a question about, you know, getting rid of a county position, right? So I definitely encourage folks to, if they're able to, watch. There have been some really great candidate forums and issue forums that have been put on by the League of Women Voters and the NAACP. And so going and checking those out, getting informed, and making a plan to vote by April 6th, I really do think is important, because there are a lot of things that are decided at the local local level that I think that sometimes people are frustrated about, but don't know that they can change it.
Mm. Obviously, yep. April 6th, it's a Tuesday. You can vote early, right?
Yep. Early voting is happening. Brookings and the Lahaina Union, I believe, are the two locations for early voting. Folks have mail-in ballots. Get them sent in, right? Like, whatever feels like the right way to vote. I know for the primary, I went to my local polling station before I walked to work that morning, and everyone was masked. They were really good about COVID protocols. It was really quick. So just encourage people to do that. I think that, like, I really appreciate having this opportunity to talk to you more. Like you said, there are some really important things that have happened since we last talked. And I know a lot of people are really hurting. That's not new, right? Whether it's related to racism, whether it's related to utility concerns. And I really do think we're positioned to make things better for Urbana. I want to be part of that change. And like I said, I just appreciate the opportunity to talk about my hopes for our future.
Sure. And whatever happens, if you win, if you don't, but if you ever want to come back on and talk more about, you know, the city of Urbana, because, you know, it's always, you know, there will always be, you know, stuff happening with city council and Illinois and unfortunately this pandemic. Thank you so much, JF, for coming on, and good luck to you, you know, and with your campaign. I know it's, when did you start this campaign?
So the signature collection was back in November, and then it's been a process of, you know, learning all the different pieces. And I will say that someone who's running for the first time, it's an adventure, right? And figuring out, you know, what are the pieces that I need? How do I raise money, right? Like getting things like yard signs and flyers to hand out to people for folks like myself who are not independently wealthy, right? That's a process. So I do feel very fortunate that my family, my friends have been incredibly supportive as I've been learning the ropes. And then also just that so many of my neighbors have been so open to talking to me, sharing their opinions, their ideas about, you know, what do we need to be doing here in Ward 4. So yeah, it's quite a process. It's been really interesting to see how the primary went. Like you said, the turnout was incredibly low, right? There were like some of these votes that were determined by just like a handful of people. So just thinking about how do we try to get more people to recognize that their voices, their votes matter, and not to take it for granted, right? Not to just assume you know, this area tends to be, you know, tends to vote this way, so of course it'll be fine. Because I know it's really easy to feel that way, especially when there are so many other things. I know so many people are overwhelmed, but really just ask that people do one more thing, right, of making that plan to vote by April 6th.
Again, that was Jaya Colasetti, who is running for Urbana City Council in Ward 4. And thank you. Thank you to her again for doing that follow-up interview and for giving that information. A reminder that if you remember last week, I played the Illinois Commerce Commission, and there's been a grassroots movement called hashtag No Immigrant Shutoffs. I've featured them on here. Of course, Alan Max Axelrod, who's a member of the Central Illinois Champaign-Urbana Democratic Socialists of America, DSA, CUDSA. If you would like to, there is a phone number to call the Illinois Commerce Commission to tell them not to extend the moratorium on utilities. That phone number is 1-800-524-0795. Again, that phone number is 1-800-524-0795. And let's see, we got about 10 minutes left or so. Again, a reminder, municipal elections here in Champaign County are on April 6th. That is a week from tomorrow, April 6th, Tuesday. Municipal elections, mayor, city council, school board. I believe Parkland College has some special elections, city council, If you know somebody who lives in Savoy, their board of trustees, I believe, I think township. I'm just thinking of mine, but just a reminder: the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. We do have some public service announcements. But yeah, once again, a reminder, Tuesday, April 6th is the municipal election. There is the Champaign County Clerk website, champaigncountyclerk.com, all one word, that you can go to check out about voting. And there is also the League of Women's Voters, League of LW, now I'm forgetting it, League of Women Voters, LW... League of Women. See, I'm blanking on it. LWVChampaignCounty.org. That's the League of Women's Voters of Champaign County. You can go to their website. They have election videos. They have candidates. They have candidate debates. They have stuff about registering to vote, preparing to vote. Vote. I'm just looking at a calendar of... but yeah, they have a lot of information on the municipal candidates. So if you're like, I don't know who to vote for, I don't know about the candidates on this April 6th, Tuesday general election in wherever town, Urbana, Champaign, Savoy, Rantoul, you can go to if you would feel like the need to go to League of Women's Champaign County website, lwvchampaigncounty.org, lwvchampaigncounty, it's all one word, .org. All right, and let's see, what, I got some public service announcements I could read. Are you a loved one living with Parkinson's disease? That's quite the opening. Krannert Center is offering a class of gentle dance movements set to uplifting music. I'm sure we could all use some uplifting music during these times. Dance for People with Parkinson's is an online video class, so you may take part from the comfort of your home. Instructors from the dance department at the University of Illinois will guide you in the 70-minute session specially designed to assist with preserving and improving balance, flexibility, and strength. Next class session is at 9:30 a.m. Friday, April 9th. Get more information, including how to register for the class, at krannertcenter.com. krannertcenter.com. I think I'm getting a little bit too much into this. But yes, it's krannertcenter, all one word, .com. There's also Latin American dance classes that are available through April 8th. Are you interested in learning new dance steps? Also at the Krannert Center and the Center for Latin America and Caribbean Studies are teaming up to offer virtual classes available through April 8th. You can learn dances from Mexico and Argentina. Instructors will teach fundamentals, footwork, and partner work in 60-minute sessions. For more information about the performances, please visit krannertcenter.com. So yes, the same. There is stuff happening at the Krannert Center. You might want to check that out. Let's see. The Champaign Library, starting March 29th. That's today. Champaign Public Library is expanding their hours and services. The libraries will stay open evenings, offer meeting room reservations, and will provide seating throughout the main library and Douglas branch. In addition, the French Shop bookstore will be open Wednesdays and Saturdays. They look forward to welcoming you back. No mask, no entry, so please wear a mask. Visitors are required to wear an appropriate mask, keeping the nose and mouth covered at all times. Note, bandanas, scarves, masks with exhalation valves and shields are not allowed. What's available at the library? starting March 29th, today, seating is available, 2 people per table. Computers are available for 2 hours per day. Meetings and study rooms are available by reservation with reduced capacity. Curbside pickup is available. Friendship Bookstore is open Wednesdays and Saturdays. Visitors ages 15 and under must be accompanied by a parent or other adults. Unfortunately, the library cafe is temporarily closed. No eating or drinking is allowed. Let's see. We've still got a few minutes. I'm going to sort of just, again, a reminder, April 6th, the municipal election. I'm not going to shut up about it, especially next week, since that'll be the day before the election. So if you would like, please, and tell your friends, tell your family members, if you're 18 or older, maybe you should vote. Hey, it's only your local government that decides a lot of things that will affect your life here in Champaign County. And once again, a reminder, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WFT Associates. So let's see, we got about a few minutes left. I might just play a trailer I made since about the utility shutoffs, which as of now are expected to close. Well, I don't have time, unfortunately. But yes, a reminder that the Illinois Commerce Commission, as of now, is planning on shutting off utilities for people who are behind on payments. If you would like, you can call the phone number 1-800-524-0795. Again, that phone number is 1-800-524-0795. Now, I'm going to queue up a CD here. Just give me a second. I'm still getting it. Still getting it. Still here. Still. Oh, come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Well, let's see. Is there anything? Why I never will make it as a DJ. Never, probably not make it as a DJ. I'm just gonna play this. It's Mercy Me. I apologize. It's Mercy Me by, if I can get it. So that'll be it for this program of where we're at. I am clearly not a great DJ or music person doing. It's been a while. This is Mercy Me. Well, so it's like at the CD. Mercy Me, Jocelyn and Chris. One Night in November is the album. The song is Mercy Me. So please, thank you for listening. I'll be back next week with another show right before the municipal election, April 6th. So please have a good night and please be safe.
This is a new song. It's called Mercy Me.
Piece it out in parts, babe. Tell me where it goes. Come and use your fingers to keep me on my toes. Say it in a whisper. Play it like a scream over and over till I wake up from this dream. Give took me just a minute to understand the power that I feel ignite within me when I've held you for an hour. Come and pause the pacing of the stars that I can't name over and over, but it never feels the same. Mercy me, never been so lost before. Mercy me, it's all for you.
This hour of programming